welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden era. Mark Levone, you're your host for an hour of adventure. Later on, it's a broadcast of John Steele Adventurer, but first, a mysterious show from radio's past, as in there's very little information out there regarding the series or how many shows have survived, which presumably are very few, of the program Deadline for Danger. In this next broadcast from in and about the year 1943, we're brought to World War II drama, and as a reminder, some of the language reflects just that as well, it being the time period. The title of this broadcast is Number 5 for Felix.
Deadline for Danger.
Cartwright speaking.
Oh, yes, Colonel.
Now, the stuff we've been decoding is pure routine. No, nothing about Jap sub-action. All right, Colonel. No, not all. Bye now.
Brass. The way he talks, you'd think he was winning World War II from behind that desk.
Come in.
Morning, sir.
Morning, John.
May I sit down, sir?
Surely.
Thank you.
You look like a man with an idea.
Yes, sir, I do have an idea.
Well, what is it? No way to save paperclips for the War Department?
This is a rather serious idea, sir.
Don't ever tell the War Department economist that saving paperclips isn't serious. Well, come on, get off your chest.
You'll probably laugh, sir. Probably call it fantastic.
Well, maybe I will, but don't let that keep you from telling me.
Sir, the war against the Jap is being fought on the other side of the world. I'm only a cipher clerk. And most of the intercepted stuff that comes to me for decoding is routine. Jap weather reports, regulations, the brand of tin fish they'll be eating.
Get to the point, John.
I decoded a message this morning that was placed in the routine file. But I haven't been able to forget that message. On the surface, it is just routine. But we can make it much more than that, sir.
Well, if you would kindly tell me what you're driving at.
Admiral Hisaki, the most important cog in the Jap war machine. The only really great naval tactician the Japs have. Remember those three cruisers we lost in the Solomon Straits? The six destroyers and gunboats we lost in the invasion of that little island? Our supply convoy that didn't get through?
Yes, I remember all that.
Well, Hisaki was responsible. Without his brilliant planning, those sea battles would have gone our way. He never does the same thing twice and never does what you expect him to.
You sound almost like you're recommending Admiral Hisaki for a decoration.
I'm recommending that Admiral Hisaki be killed.
Yeah, sure, that'd be fine.
His death would be as good a thing for us as a major naval victory.
Granted. But, well, you don't just send out an assassin, you know.
We could send some assassins with wings.
Bombing raid, you mean?
No, sir. A special mission. Here's the message I decoded, sir. Have a look at it.
Personal inspection of Naval and Air Force installations by Admiral Hisaki. 22nd June. Riboka airstrip, 1700 hours.
That's 8 hours from now, sir. Keep reading.
Air cover ranged by fighter command. Two Betty bombers carrying admiral and staff.
You see, not just the admiral himself, but his staff, too. The brains of the Jap Navy.
Boca. We have our nearest strip at...
Menang. I checked on the map. Menang is just out of the fighter range, unless belly tanks are installed.
Yes, even then, the range a bit far. Wouldn't be much margin for error.
But it's worth the risk, sir. Well, it'd be like sinking one-third of the Jap Navy at a single stroke.
Yeah, but how about the fighter pilots who'd be sent out? Wouldn't stand much chance of getting back.
Sir, my brother is a fighter pilot in the European theater.
Yes, I know that, John. How would you like it if he were given this mission?
If the decision were up to me, sir, I'd say send him out.
Yeah, I believe you would.
Yeah. Because Hisaki's death will shorten the war by months at least. Because thousands of American lives will be saved.
8 hours... A thing like this, it's not very much time, John.
But we can try, sir.
Yes, we can try. Commanding General's office, please. Urgent.
Deadline for Danger. A half-hour study in suspense.
Sir?
Come into my office, John.
Yes, sir. Three solid hours of talking.
What did they say, sir?
Said the idea was fantastic, that there isn't one chance in 100 of it succeeding, but they'd like very much to get rid of Asaki.
Then?
Well, a message has been sent to Minong. John, we're going to give it a try.
I see.
Have a drink with me.
Yes, sir. I could use one.
Water?
No, sir.
Well, there you are.
Thank you.
Here's to...
Well, here's to the boys they'll send out.
Yeah.
Okay, George, it's up to you.
Pass.
Felix, I hear they're not giving you that zero you claimed the other day.
Yeah, how about that? Why, the thing blew up 50 yards in front of me.
Yeah, but your camera wasn't working.
So what? Well, those intelligence guys believe anything?
If your camera doesn't show it, boy, you've got to have somebody else to verify it.
How do you like that? They send you out on a patrol all by yourself. You almost get yourself killed, and then they hit you in the face with something like that.
Yeah, let's not talk, Chuck. You got a light?
Yeah, come. Anybody got a cigarette?
Yeah, I got one here.
Thanks.
Where are we? 405. It's up to you, Phil.
Yeah, just the same. I'll pass.
Again, yeah. Well, let's not be pikers. I'll open for 50,000.
$450,000.
Big time.
Yeah, look at that. I'll tell you what. Hang on.
What's money?
Dealer's got control.
Okay.
Or is it another 50,000? Now, look, fellas, if you want to get in, it's going to cost you
$100,000.
$100,000?
That's only peanuts.
Chicken
well,
face.
Yeah,
sure, I'm in.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I'll just see the raise for the time being. I might want to get into the big dough, you know?
How many?
Three.
One for me. Thanks. These are dreadful cigarettes.
Felix?
I'll play with these. You know, it's about time we had a new deck of bicycles.
Okay, dealer takes three. One, two, three. Up to you, Felix.
Oh, no. You raised my openers.
Okay.
You were the big man, remember?
How about $100,000?
$100,000. No, not for me. I'm out.
I will raise you $100,000, Pete.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll make it an even $500,000. Just to make the game interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting game. I'll see you. It just about cleans me out.
Yeah, I know. I was counting your chits.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll see the race. What do you got, Felix?
Aces and eights.
Ha ha! Three little toes.
Oh, mother. That beats me.
Well, this is pretty good. Almost $2 million in the pot. You know, I think I will open myself up a very big car factory when I get back.
You and Mr. Ford, huh?
Look, what do you say we play for real money, huh? Rummy, $1 a hand.
Oh.
$1 a hand?
Real
are you
dumb.
Nuts? Say, I just increased my allotment yesterday.
Oh, Boris.
Hey, hun!
Take it easy, fellas. Save that till you get back to the States.
Yeah, well, we just figured we'd get a little practice, Colonel, you know?
Hey, Colonel, hey, what's this I hear about that zero being taken away from me the other day?
No verification, Felix.
Oh, verification, but... Well, is it my fault the camera didn't work? Look, that was number five already.
Felix wants to be an ace, Colonel. He wants to send back a letter to that dame of his, and he wants to say, honey, today I am a ace.
shut up, will you? This would have to be the 100 Years War before you could get five.
All of the time buzzword. That's what they used to call me.
Yeah, well, tell you what.
That ain't what they call you now,
you guys can knock them all down. I just want to go home.
If you fellas get through today's mission, you can all go home.
Oh, well, thanks.
Okay. We just received a radio message right from Washington, D.C.
Say, were you kidding about going home?
Nope.
Well, this one must be a Lulu.
It is.
Well, what's it all about, Colonel?
You got your things? Come over to the briefing room ready to fly, and I'll tell you. Our target, fellows, isn't a place. It's a man.
Oh. A man?
I get it. We're going to fly to Tokyo, shoot up Tojo, land on Tokyo Boulevard, refuel from a gas station pump, and fly back home. home.
That, Phil, would not be any tougher than the mission you're going on.
Huh. You know, I don't think that I like this, Simon.
I don't like it either. But for once, I agree with the high brass. This is just about the most important mission of the war.
You know something? I don't like it either. Who's the target, Colonel?
Admiral Hizaki.
Admiral... Oh, man.
And, how do we get to him?
According to an intercepted message, he's due to arrive at Booker's Strip at 1700 hours. There'll be two Bettys and an undisclosed amount of zeros as fighter cover.
Which of the Bettys will he be in?
We have no way of knowing. That means you have to get both of them.
See, how many of us are going, Colonel?
The four of you.
Wait, no guys from the other outfits?
No, just the four of you.
Hey, man, that's rough. If we get back, we...
It's going to be cozy, though.
Yeah. We, if we do get back, we go home and sell war bonds, huh?
Yep.
Listen, Colonel, Boca Strip's a long haul.
There are mechanics putting special fuel tanks on your planes right now.
Well, how do we work it, Colonel?
Well, the thing has to be timed right down to the minute. You should arrive at Boca Strip at 1655 hours.
Uh-huh.
You'll cruise around waiting for the air convoy to arrive. You'll fly right over the water all the way. Felix, you'll lead, of course.
Well, of course. Listen, Colonel, suppose we get jumped on the way.
I'm coming to that. If you run into nips and you can't avoid them, we'll put what we call Plan 1 into action.
Plan 1, huh?
What's that?
Now, I've got three matchsticks in my hand, all the different lengths. Take one, Pete.
I'll keep Pete.
Okay.
George?
This one?
Yeah, Phil.
Thanks.
Well, looks like mine's the midget.
Okay, George. In the event of an attack by enemy fighters, you'll work Plan 1. You'll peel off and act as decoy. The rest of you will fly straight on. You will not try to give George any help. You got that straight?
Yeah.
How did George get so lucky?
Good. All right to me.
Good.
Listen, Colonel, it's just a thought, but suppose we get jumped twice on the way.
That'll be Plan 2. Now, Phil, your matchstick is the next shortest, isn't it?
That's right, sir.
Okay. Plan 2, that's yours.
Oh, thank you.
Listen, how about code names?
For once, we'll be simple. You'll identify each other by Christian names. I'll be sitting in the tower right next to the radio all the while.
Well, how about radio silence?
Use your own discretion.
Okay.
That's a break anyway.
We'll observe radio silence unless I break it. Anything else, Colonel?
That's about all, I guess.
Colonel, do we have any time to write letters and things?
Yeah, that's a point.
Yeah. I'd like to wash a pair of socks.
15 minutes. You'll find paper and envelopes on the long table.
Oh, good. I want to write a letter to my wife.
Oh, man. Not again.
Yeah, I missed out for more than a week.
Well, fellas, I think you know what I want to say, so I won't say it. All I will say is, good luck.
Yeah, man, we're going to need it. We're going to need a whole cartload of it. How do you spell supramundane?
Supra what?
Mundane. Means ordinary. You know, like a dame is okay, but you don't go walking through a blizzard just all hands with her.
Well, look, why don't you just tell the dame she's terrific and let it go at that, huh?
Because this one happens to be special, that's why. I might even want to marry her.
Oh, lucky girl.
Oh, smart boy.
Okay, fellas.
Time's up.
Colonel, look, what'll I address this envelope?
Just leave your letters on the table. I'll see that they get sent out. The command car is ready. Did you fellas forget anything?
I think I've got everything.
No, it's okay.
Okay. Let's go down to the strip.
Felix calling tower. Come in.
Yeah, Felix.
Just about set.
Okay, you got the green light. Dave, there's just one thing, Colonel. Phil here.
Yeah? What is it?
Well, I done right in the letter. I just couldn't think of anything to say, but... you remember that blonde waitress at the Randolph Field?
Sadie.
Yeah, well, when we left Randolph, she gave me a sort of keepsake and a chain. It's in my locker. Would you say that it gets back to her if I, you know?
Yeah, I know, Phil. I'll say to her.
Thanks.
Okay, guys. We're on the way. Radio silence, you dope.
Yeah, even with some Zeeks above us.
What? Where?
10 o'clock, high. Yeah, there's three of them, Felix.
Stay in formation for a while. There are four of us and three of them. Maybe they'll decide they want to go home.
Hey, you're peeling off. They're going to have a crack at us, Felix.
Okay, George, plan one.
Right. Dropping tank. See you guys back at Lenong.
Good luck, fella.
George, calling Red Dog. Calling Red Dog. Come in.
Tower here, George. What happened?
Plan one. Three Zeeks. I got two.
George, you've been hurt.
Yeah. Pretty bad.
Sergeant, get out and make sure the ambulance is ready.
Right.
George, can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you see me?
See you.
My eyes gave out on me a couple of minutes ago.
Corporal, have that crash truck ready on the bit strip.
Yes, sir.
Tower. Red Dog Tower.
I'm here, George.
Can you see me?
Yeah, I can see you. Is your vision completely gone?
It's like looking at a red curtain. Who wools a red curtain?
Well, listen. I'll guide you into the big strip, okay?
Okay, Colonel.
All right, here we go. I'll turn you around first. Left rudder until I say stop.
Left rudder?
Easy. Now, kick your right. Too much, George. See if you can feel a couple of degrees to your left with the seat of your pants.
Okay. There. How's that?
Okay, good. Now look, you're up about 2,000, but you got plenty of room ahead. Take her down in a shallow dive.
Okay. Take her down.
Easy. Too steep, George. Pull it back on her a bit. George, you're too steep. George, can't you hear me? George, pull her back. Back.
No strength, Carl.
George!
Felix calling Phil. Come in, Phil.
Yeah, what is it?
Have a look at 8 o'clock.
Zeeks, four up.
Pete, come in.
Right, Felix.
Follow my lead. Phil, plan two.
Okay, I'm the bunny. Hope you get number 5 before you finish, Felix.
Thanks. We'll open up that scotch later.
Yeah. Here I go.
And here we go, Pete.
I'm chewing on your tail.
Hey, Pete, can you see Phil?
Yeah. He's in the middle of it. Hey, there's one coming under him. Watch it, Phil. Get out of it. Hey, there's another one diving on him.
big cloud. Head for it.
Right!
Auxiliary tank's gone dry. Switching over. Dropping tank.
I might as well drop mine, too.
No, no. Hold on to that gas. It might come in handy for you.
But you're streaking ahead of me.
Sorry, I'll throttle down. Hey, Pete. If you want to talk, you can talk your fool head off.
Something I can't think of much to say.
There's Boca Island just ahead.
Yeah, I know.
We're right on time.
I hope they are. If they're not, the sky's going to be full of Zeeks in about 10 minutes. You can just see the Jap operations officer in Boca. But he's yelling for those Zeke pilots in the script to scramble right now.
I don't think their radars pick us up. Not the way we're kissing those waves.
Yeah, but they got observation posts and all those small islands we passed. They couldn't miss us.
Yeah, that's why I started talking.
What had George made of?
Well, he didn't have far to go. With luck, he might have ditched those Zeeks.
Sure hope he did. He was married 4 days before we left the States, you know.
Yeah, I know, all right. He told me at least 100 times how beautiful she is. I even know about the mole on her left elbow.
Felix!
Yeah?
Look! 12 o'clock, dead ahead.
Two Bettys. That's them.
Holy cow, look at that umbrella over their heads. 6, 8, 12. Both skies loaded with them.
Bettys are at about 2,500, zeros about 5,000. Now listen, if we can come around without being spotted, we can take one of those Bettys each and run.
Yeah, if we're not spotted and if we can get one bomber each. Monkeys have probably already picked us up in their radio sets.
Well, here's hoping they don't understand English.
Hey, that lead Betty's coming down, the others following. Looks like they go straight into the strip without circling.
Okay, stay with me. I'll take the lead one.
Right.
We're coming at them fast.
The Zeeks are keeping their altitude. Glory be, they haven't spotted us yet.
We'll climb and get right on the tails of those Bettys.
Check.
Now they've seen us, Pete.
Yeah, filling up.
Tail gunner on the Betty is going for you.
No, I go for him. Got him! Got him!
Right. Now head for home.
After you're finished with that one.
Never mind me.
Hey, Felix, what's the matter?
I said scram.
Here come the Zeeks! Felix! Felix!
I'm okay. Now, listen. I'm still giving the orders, Pete. Get back to Manon. Get back fast.
Not until you take care of that Betty.
I'll take care of it my own way.
Well, do it now. He's got his flaps down.
Pull up. Zeeks are coming at you. We'll be too late when you get here. My guns are jammed. I can't get them working.
When you head back, I'm coming down.
No, you're not.
Felix!
I'll get them broadside on.
Pull away! Get the heck back and leave them to me!
Keep on flying, Pete, and don't forget, this is number 5.
Felix!
So long!
Are you all right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm okay, Colonel.
The others?
Phil got it in plan two.
Felix?
Felix did what he could. He rammed the second Betty. We got both of them. But that burnt out fighter, short of the strip.
Oh. George.
Yeah, I'm the only one back. I've always been lucky. Just before the mission, I won $2 million.
I'll help you down.
Yeah. By the way, that was number 5 for Felix. On his verification.
Sure.
Colonel.
Huh?
You got anything to drink?
A couple of bottles in my footlocker.
Good. Let's bust them.
Deadline for Danger on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated broadcast from in and about the year 1943. This is an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Lipponier. Now time for an episode of John Steele Adventurer called High Test, an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast from December 21st, 1954.
This is John Steele reporting on Adventure. The gal in this story is a cross between Elizabeth Taylor, the Queen of Iran, and Marilyn Monroe. She's my candidate for the most beautiful dame in the world. I met her in North Africa. We had a lot of fun together. There were 3 of us. The gal, a guy named Cardew, and yours truly. I call this transcribed yarn High Test. About 400 miles south of Tripoli is the area of the Libyan desert called Fezzan. Fezzan is just what any man-sized desert should be. The main oasis is a place called Seba, which is a fair-sized desert city. There's water in other places, if you can find it in time. But when I landed in Tripoli to the north, I wasn't thinking of making a pilgrimage into the desert. I was on my way home, hoping to get to New York by Christmas. That time of year, it's not particularly warm in North Africa. It's comfortably hot part of the day, then gets quite cool, sometimes real cold by nightfall, which leads up to just one thing. It was cool enough for me to doll up in a tuxedo and to drop in at a nightclub called the Embassy. It was my bad luck to run into a guy who's as fond of me as I am of him. Now, I don't mind a guy being a millionaire. I'd like to be one myself, and I can appreciate it if he spends his time just drifting around the world. That's the story of my life, too. But I don't go along with a fellow American whose idea of fun is to make a fool of himself abroad. That's what hurt. Because Cardew was a real two-fisted character who knew his way around.
Good evening, Stu.
What'll it be, Cardew?
A double vodka with a dash of champagne.
You heard him, Ollie.
Yes, yes. Double scotch and soda for Mr. Cardew.
Well, how do you like that?
What are you doing here, Cardew?
Having fun.
Good, clean fun, I hope.
Yes, and there is my idea of what we're talking about.
My, my.
You know who she is?
No idea.
Princess Zezar.
So who is she?
I just told you.
Never heard of her.
She is beautiful. Admit that, Steele.
I admit it, which gets me where?
Nowhere, my boy. I saw her first.
Is that going to impress her?
Well, she's out for fun.
Who are the people, if you'll excuse the word, that are with her?
Some broken-down European royalty.
Now tell me who she is.
She's a tribal princess from Fezzan.
Quite a doll in any language.
Yes, and she's looked over here once or twice.
I wouldn't let her get away with that.
I think she's interested.
She looks bored.
Well, with that crummy bunch she's with.
You figure she wants you to rescue her.
You know, Steele, I might do just that.
You see those 2 guys standing against the wall behind her?
Yeah, they're her bodyguards.
So long as you know.
Oh, it'll be a calculated risk.
Yeah.
If I get into a jam, you move in and we'll clean up the joint, huh?
If you drag me into any trouble, expect me to slug you.
I'll remind you, boy. Now watch me pick this babe up.
I watched. The princess not only laughed when he addressed her, but after a few moments of talk, she stood up and Cardew was leading her towards me. Only about that time, the two bodyguards intervened, and so did a lot of her friends.
Hey, Steve, come on in the water spy.
I should drown you in it.
It was good while it lasted last night.
The club will sue us.
Oh, I'll pay for the damage.
You and I are flying down to Fezzan.
Pal, I am on my way to Monte Carlo.
I chartered a small plane. We're leaving at noon.
For Monte Carlo?
For Fezzan. I'm doing the flying, and you're paying all expenses.
What's up, Steele?
That girl is to be executed unless we show up. Even then, we may not be able to save her.
Executed?
Oh, some tribal custom she violated when she walked off from that table with you last night.
Steele, come on. This is 1950.
All right. When we get down there, you bring the natives up to date. They may be using the wrong calendar. It was just after sundown when we flew over a desert town called Birbir El Hassin on the Wadi El Agail. I landed the plane on the desert. About 100 Arab warriors mounted on war camels met us and escorted us into the village. Later on, after we'd been fed and given a chance to wash up, we were led into a room that looked like something out of the Arabian Nights. A character who introduced himself as Racine briefed us on why we were there.
I am the Princess Zaza's cousin.
Okay, so what's the pitch?
The princess' position is somewhat delicate.
Why? What has she done?
She behaved improperly in Tripoli.
Oh, you're crazy. Oh,
you have an American expression, a pickup. She allowed herself to be picked up by you.
Well, what's so bad about that?
By allowing herself to be picked up by you, the princess is liable to the death penalty.
Now, look.
Barbaric?
Yeah, very.
But we cling to old customs.
Well, it's time some changes were made.
The issue is this. Perhaps the princess decided you were worthy of her without consulting us.
Could be.
Upon that depends her life.
What?
You can both save her life by submitting to a test.
Test?
All of us here who hold high office have undergone this test. Nothing you will be asked to do is impossible. I survived all the same tests.
They still say something.
One question, Racine.
Yes?
Can this test prove fatal?
Oh, yes. You may both die.
I see.
Courage will not always be a necessary quality. Wisdom may often be more useful than courage.
Well, chum, anything you can do, I can do better.
In which case, the princess will live.
That adds up.
There is an open door to your left. Go into it. The door will close.
Now, what's inside that room?
Nothing.
No?
Come on, Cardew.
Sure, I'll try anything once. Well, I've been in worse jails than this one.
Look overhead.
A small dome.
Yeah. But get a load of that sheet of metal hanging from the center.
Aha. Maybe a gong of some kind, huh?
It is a gong. Watch your eardrums if somebody starts going to work on it.
What?
Reminds me of something I once saw in China. Basic form of sound torture.
Holy catfish.
Put something over your ears.
Oh, what kind of a crazy deal is this?
Do what I tell you.
Ah, come on. Shut that lousy racket off up there. Come on! Shut that racket up, you hear me? You hear me?
The vibrations of the big gong didn't take long in building up to the point where Cardew and I felt as if someone was going to work on our brains with 1,000 sledgehammers. Just one thing stayed with me. Racine had said no matter what test we were put through, that test could be survived. I had his word for it. The grim fact was Cardew and I had to survive or the princess was going to die. I figured even if one of us lived, it might help. Anyway, the sound of the gong wasn't going to kill us. It might just drive us nuts.
How long does this go on?
You tell me.
So help me, Steele. I can't stand this much more.
Keep your hands pressed over your ears.
All because of that date.
Come on, come on.
I'm
a little bit
trouble.
You'll learn if you live long enough.
I can stand a lot of things, Steele, but I can't stand this. I can't stand it.
Thank you.
Hey, the racket has stopped.
Yeah, while you slept.
Okay, pal, thanks.
Anytime, Cardew.
You stayed awake through it?
Well, there was no one to slug me. And I'd been through it once before in China. Hey, what? We're getting company.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you seem none the worse for your first experience.
What did it prove?
Nothing at all. It was simply a preliminary test. You have good nerves. You'll need them.
I'll bet we will.
You can come out now. Coffee will be served you. Then we'll continue.
Coffee was served to us by pretty slave girls, and my pal Cardew didn't even make a pass at one. Then we were taken outside of the village to the banks of the Wadi. There wasn't a lot of water in the stream. It was about a quarter of a mile wide at the broadest point. But to make up for the lack of water, there was crocodiles. This was going to be fun.
It can be done, you know.
We have to cross that stream.
There are 7 crocodiles in the water. We are standing at the widest section of the stream. Down there, the stream is narrower. Up that way, even narrower. You have the choice of which part of the stream you cross.
Oh, what more do we want?
One thing you should know. If you choose to cross at either of the narrow sections, you will be whipped and stoned as you try to reach the water.
Oh, well, that's for me. Steve, let's go.
No. We wade and swim across the wide part.
You're out of your mind, Steve.
Come on, I'm on my way.
Oh, all right, I'll do it your way. Those lousy crocodiles coming this way. Come on, Steele, for Pete's sake, let's go
stand
here.
Take your time. Stay right behind me. Don't either to the left or to the right.
Never mind your political platform.
Okay, it's deep enough to swim. Come on. We swam. On either side of us, crocodiles started to close in. At one point, we swam between two of them. Their snapping jaws not 10 inches away from us. At another point, two of the beasts started lashing the water with their tails. Cardew and I sweated it out. Curiously, the crocodiles didn't quite reach us. I noticed Racine and some of his boys riding their horses across the wadi further downstream. And when we got ashore, he was there to meet us.
My congratulations. You're doing quite well.
You're having fun?
Let me explain.
You don't have to.
Oh, let him.
You did well to insist on choosing the middle of the widest area of the stream, Mr. Steele.
Yeah, obviously.
At any other point, the crocodiles would have reached you.
Well, why didn't they reach us as it was, then?
They were held by long chains.
Chains?
There's just that one narrow path across the stream, which they cannot quite reach.
How did you figure that one out, Steele?
Well, there had to be a way across. I was looking for it. I saw a couple of those crocodiles swimming. Suddenly, something seemed to hold them back when they reached the wide part.
If you had chosen the narrower parts, you would have been stoned and whipped as punishment for stupidity, then killed by the crocodiles.
Well, are we all through now?
Oh, no. This is just the beginning.
I'd seen variations of the crocodile test before, but the next thing on the program was something new to me. It was a cool night, and we weren't allowed to dry off after leaving the water. We'd started to shiver. A few minutes later, we were conscious of perspiration pouring down our faces. 2 half-naked characters showed up. Each one was holding a snake. The reptiles were about 2 feet long and almost black. Some sort of a viper, I think. In any case, they were deadly poisonous.
Now, you see how these men hold the snakes? The right hand grips them around the neck. The left hand grips them about the middle of the body.
Now, look.
These 2 men are not professional snake charmers. They are just 2 ordinary warriors. So, you see, the snakes can be held. Now, very carefully, transfer the snakes to your hands.
It was a neat trick, but it was done. Cardew and I found ourselves holding the reptiles in our hands. I could feel the ripples of the smooth skin racing through my fingers as I held on for dear life.
How long are we supposed to hold them?
That is for you to decide.
For us to decide?
Just remember, the snakes are venomous. If we release them, they will strike. The moment one of your hands relaxes, in that moment, it will happen.
I've got it, Steele.
Let's hear about it.
We wade into the water and we hold them under until they're dead.
We might stumble.
Well, we'll have to be careful.
Cardew, one little stumble and your instinct is to reach out for support. And that'll be it.
Yeah. All right, you think of something.
Think carefully, my friends, and hold on to those snakes. Don't relax pressure for a moment.
Strangle them, Steele. That's it. Strangle them.
Try it for just a second. You'll have your hands full. More so than now. I tried it a second ago.
You mean we couldn't even just drop them to the ground?
The split-second pressure is the least. They'll strike. Don't let go, Cardew.
Well, think of something.
Part of your idea was good just now. The water. Come on, do what I do.
I can't hold this thing much longer, Steele.
Come on, over here, to the edge of the water.
Now what?
Kneel down. On your left knee. Kneel, yeah.
All right.
Careful. Don't overbalance.
I'm okay.
It's muddy here, see?
Yeah?
The ground's soft. Press the snake's head into the mud. Well, go on, do it.
All right, all right.
Careful now. Now do exactly what I'm doing. Start moving your right foot towards where you're holding the snake's neck in your right hand.
Yeah? All right.
Not too fast, Cardew. You might overbalance yourself.
I'm nearly there.
Now get your right foot over the snake's neck. And make sure its head is deep in the ground as you can get it.
All right.
Now we'll have a full second to scramble back when we let go. And in that second, your right foot will automatically press the snake's head still further into the ground.
Okay. Here we go.
The gong was a test of nerves. The crocodile's a test of wisdom. The snake, a test of resourcefulness.
Oh, what's left?
Two more things. You can give up now if you wish.
Only if we do...
The princess dies. Yes.
Okay, Steele, we keep going?
Why not?
You know, what burns me up is I didn't even get to go out with that dame. All I said was hello.
You may get to say goodbye to her. The next thing the boys came up with for Cardew and me was a fate worse than death, though I'm not so sure about that as I look back. We hadn't seen the princess, had no idea where she was. But to make up for that, we were shown another girl. This one was blonde. I don't think she was Arab. She could have been. I've seen plenty of blonde-haired Arab gals. Only this one looked sort of Scandinavian. She wore her hair in two long braids that reached to her waist. Oh, she was a gorgeous doll. Take it from my pal Cardew. We squatted on some cushions in a sort of oriental boudoir. Cardew and I and this girl. Just the three of us. And some nice mood music that came from somewhere around. The girl said nothing. She just looked starry-eyed. And after a while, she started to dance for us.
Oh, what has the Dance of the Seven Veils got that this one ain't got?
Six veils.
Yeah, but this is much better, much better. Oh, baby.
Relax.
She's for me, Steele.
Figure it out.
This is no time for figuring.
Haven't you ever seen a dame before?
No, not like this one.
Why is she here, Cardew?
To find out if we're mice or men.
Could be.
Sure it is.
Only don't make any passes at her.
That is why she's here.
Now, wait a minute. This is Arab country. The true Arab's idea of good fun is the exquisite torture of self-denial.
Oh, look at her, will you? Oh, hey, doll, don't you know it takes two to tango?
Oh, sit down.
Lay off, Steele.
Sit down, you chump.
This one I play the way I see.
Let her alone.
Look, Steele, I wouldn't want to louse up a perfectly good friendship.
Then sit down.
But I warn you, pal, don't spoil my boyish
fun.
You
take one step towards that girl and you'll have to fight your way to her.
If that is the way you want it, then... Oh! Wait a minute. Hold it. She's gone.
Yeah, you see? You frightened her off.
Well, let's settle our argument anyhow, huh?
All right.
Always the resort to violence.
Oh, it's you, is it?
I was always within hearing, Mr. Cardew. The princess will still live, thanks to Mr. Steele's knowledge of our people.
All right, Steele, so we played it your way again. You know, this could get sickening. Hey, Racine, who was the blonde?
No one you will ever meet again.
Hey.
She's one of the slave girls. Will you both come with me?
The dancing girl had been strictly an interlude. What came next was the last act. I wasn't too surprised when we saw what it was. We were taken to the edge of a lion pit. It was about 20 feet deep into the ground and about 60 feet in diameter. We were led down into it by way of a tunnel that opened directly into the pit. Once inside the pit, we saw an opening in the wall, a gateway. And behind the gate was a very angry lion.
There is nothing false about that lion.
So what are we supposed to do, choke it to death?
Oh, no. As always, the decision is yours.
Well, so far it's been Steele's.
Not this time. You can leave the pit, Mr. Cardew.
Oh, no.
It's an order.
Look, this is my pal, Steele. We're a team.
Not this time, Mr. Cardew. Mr. Steele will take the test by himself. You will follow him.
How about that, Steele?
A question, Racine.
Yes?
If one of us should fail and the other come through, the princess still lives?
We want her to live. That is why she is being given two separate chances.
All right, suppose I come through. Wouldn't that be enough?
But Mr. Steele goes first.
Well, if I come through, Cardew needn't take the test.
You would spoil our fun unless you both take the test.
Oh, well, let's not spoil your fun.
Now, if you will kindly leave the pit, my men will escort you.
Steele.
I know. Don't think about it.
Well, good luck, Philip.
You bet. See you around.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Steele.
What's the deal?
First, come and look at the lion.
Why not?
He is a Nubian lion.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Now, right opposite the lion, on the other side of the pit, there is the gateway through which you just came.
Yeah.
Now, once the lion is released, how long would it take him to reach that gateway?
Oh, about 2 seconds, if he was in a hurry.
He'll be there in one. He always is.
Okay, so?
You will stand about halfway from here to the gateway.
I'll have a head start.
How long will it take you to get from the center of this pit to the gateway?
30 feet, I'd say about 2 seconds, if I'm in a hurry, and I expect to be.
In short, the lion should reach you before you can escape.
Unless he's delayed.
You will have to think of a way to delay him, then.
Yeah, yeah.
However, you may choose another possible way. One of my men is now placing a long spear in the center of the pit. If you like, you might take your chances with that.
Would you?
The decision is yours. You can still give up the idea and let the princess...
I'll take my chances. The gamble intrigues me.
Then please stand in the center of the pit. How clever are you, Mr. Steele?
I'll let you know afterwards. Oh, just one favor.
Yes?
Let me take off my boots.
Very well.
Hobnails are not good for this kind of a situation.
Yes, I agree. Well, I think I will leave you.
Yeah, you do that.
Now, as soon as I walk through that gateway, the lion's door will be raised, and he will be free.
Racine walked away while I was taking off my boots. About that time, someone started pulling up the chain that held the door of the lion's cage. I threw one boot at the lion, then the second. Then I took off like jet-propelled lightning. The boots took the animal by surprise for just those extra 2 seconds I needed.
Well, I didn't think you would be able to do it.
You sound disappointed.
I was thinking of the lion. He was so sure of you.
Does Cardew have to go through that one?
Oh, yes.
Suppose I talk him out of it. We have your word. The princess is safe now.
Let us say you must go through an extra test and suffer your friend to go through what you have just gone through. In any case, he must. The choice is no longer his or yours.
Where is he?
In a hut. He does not know how you fared. You may be dead for all he knows. Come this way. I cannot allow you to talk with him. This is where you stand, Mr. Cardew. When I walk through the gateway, we've just come through. The lion's door will be raised, and he will be free.
Why don't you tell me what happened to Steele? Is he okay?
A question that hardly matters to you at this moment. I'm leaving you now. There is the long spear, if you care to use it.
Okay, we'll use the spear.
Lousy spear, it's no good. Ah! Ah! Ah!
As I said in the beginning, I liked Cardew as much as he liked me, which was a whole lot, in case I gave you the wrong idea. Cardew didn't make that final test. He grabbed the spear. It was no good. It was broken. I hadn't figured on that. Yeah, he died in that lion pit. But there was nothing the authorities could do about it. Way down in Fezzan, there isn't much authority. And there are places like that still left in the world. Sure, the princess was spared. And last time I heard of her, she was in Paris, having the time of her life with people her tribe approved of.
John Steele, adventurer, was brought to you through the facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
John Steele, Adventurer, on Tuned to Yesterday, first heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on December 21st, 1954. That was an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast. Wrapping up this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for tuning in.